So how, Michael, and fellow panelists and audience, I mean, what would you like to see other than liquidating the award body, the awarding three awarding bodies, or liquidating their triumvirate monopoly position or whatever? What institutional machinery would you like to see put in place to radically rethink, to start with saying this can't go on like this? Because, you know, I'm sensing a tremendous desire, you know, all sorts of passions among you for kind of wanting to sustain the enthusiasm that students have when they come out of earlier stages and key three, and just wanting somehow to harness that, really. Ben, do you, I mean, you're a dictator on this, and what would you want to do? I mean, what should we be thinking about now?
Well, I think you've actually got to take it back a couple of stages. That, you know, the key question, I don't know who it was from the audience there, was, you know, replace it with what? It's all very well having a go at these sort of things. I still have yet to hear anybody come up with a credible alternative. now, one of the reasons for that actually takes us back to two key points. The first one is that an awful lot of, let me take a general point of principle, that nobody really seems to me to be calling for the abolition of roads because people drive badly. Yeah, and so I think bad practice is not necessarily a reason to trash a structure. The truth is, Michael, the Key Stage 3 is just as catastrophic, and the Ofsted report has shown, in part, sorry, I hasten to add, you know, there's just as much bad practice there with a good structure as you do get good practice with a structure that you might not be quite as happy with. So your first issue is the league tables and the whole control and command culture that comes with that, which leads people, teachers in many cases, to come under huge pressure to adopt safety-first approaches, sometimes that are counterintuitive. And when somebody says to me, you know, I have to make them jump through hoops, yeah, you do have to make them jump through hoops if you want them to get crap marks, yeah? And, you know, if you come and actually take the time to come and mark, for example, and I am speaking from an OCR perspective, I can't represent the other exam groups here, but we spend an awful lot of time giving very low marks to formulaic responses. And if you take this year, for example, on the paper that I set, one of the questions we actually gave about 6-8 lines, something like that. And it was the story of a man in 1915, a miner, who had signed up for to join the army and was turned down and was sent back because he was a reserved occupation. We didn't tell the students any of that. And he then went on strike afterwards, and it described the success of the strike, etc. Many of you will know what I'm talking about here. And we asked the question, are you surprised by this source? And it was a platform for students to look at the source at its own content level, but also to look at it at its heuristic level, what the meaning of that source was, and also to place it into a wider context. Now, it seems to me that that's the kind of thing a historian does, is to look at a source and say, oh, I'm quite surprised that that happened at that point, and to articulate an answer to that. We also asked the question about a couple of sources where we said, do you think the historian would find these useful? And many students came up with what answers that you might expect, but they also actually said things that we were hoping for, the unexpected things, essentially, with, actually, you know what, this source tells me an awful lot about the person who's written it in the first place, not just extracting content out of it. Generally speaking, if you don't write formulaic answers, you get better marks. And anyone who tells you otherwise is wrong, because I'm the one who sets the paper, and I'm the one who actually draws up the mark scheme. I fully accept that there are issues. The question six, the formulate question, you know, there are problems there, and we're looking at it, we're scratching our head over that. But even there, guys, I mean, you know, there must be things going on out there when we have students who are saying things like, here is a statement, source, this particular source supports this statement, okay? There's my argument. Oh, and by the way, it's completely unreliable. And what are we supposed to do with that? Yeah, I'm going to use this source in my argument, and you shouldn't believe me. Okay, now that means that there's a need to put that time and investment into the discussion of the kinds of activities that we were talking about earlier on, which is the same kind of teaching and learning processes. You teach as well, if just simply do the things that work well lower down the school, and the students come out there as thinking individuals. The narrowness of the content, I wouldn't be at all averse to a rethink about the whole structure of content at 14 to 16, which broadened things out. But let's look at why it's there. It's there because Kenneth Clark bottled the decision 20-something years ago, and so people, you know, teachers know that a lot of their students aren't going to take this up at 14, or sorry, beyond 14, so they're saying to themselves, well, I want some of them to do modern history here, but I know that maybe I'm going to repeat it again. So that's one of the issues there. There's a wider issue about the perceived relevance of history as well. One of the reasons why so many students drop the subject is that they think it's irrelevant to them. They also think other subjects are more relevant. And my final point would be with regard to the inertia of boards. Again, I can't speak for the others, but the kind of inertia that we have developed is a controlled assessment model that requires students to pursue an inquiry based around historical sources and deeper reading, and to spend 8 hours constructing a narrative. Now, that sounds a lot like decent history to me. And I will go toe to toe with anybody on this one quite happily. And my final sort of little dig as far as the inertia is concerned is that this year, in addition to all of the other option units that we had available, we added China, the end of the British Empire, 1919 to 1975, a unit on international terrorism, and one on Iraq and the Iraq War and the consequences of it. It's 20th century, I'll grant you that. That's the brief we were dealt. Thank you.
There you are. There are GCSE and process lovers out there.